It's Wednesday, September 29th, 2010. This is Wendy Erickson. I'm a reference librarian at the Parchment Community Library. And today, we're taking the oral history of Dave Delamy. So, Dave, what is your full name?
David Joseph Delamy.
When and where were you born?
I was born in South Haven, Michigan, April 10th, 1948.
And where do you live today?
I live in Oxego, Michigan.
And how long have you lived there?
Well, October 6th, or about another week, would be 16 years.
Okay. And what is your personal connection to the Parchment area?
Well, we moved here as a family. I remember John Kennedy was president, yeah.
Sure.
So it was about the end of 62, I think it was, when we moved here.
Okay.
My dad got tired of, after many years driving back and forth every day, 6-7 days a week from South Haven to Parchment.
Because he worked in the mill.
Yes, he worked 7 days a week.
What was your dad's name?
Joseph Delamy. He was a paper tester up at Mill 2.
I see. And do you know how long he worked there?
Well, he had around near 30 years in 1978 when he retired. Right out of World War II, you know.
Okay.
He was actually in some of the first guys who helped put the sizing tanks in.
Mm-hmm.
When he retired in 78, for 1 or 2 years, they used to call him up once in a while. And they couldn't find things that were not on the charts, you know, or on the blueprint. And call Joe up, because Joe would know where this goes to, or when they put this in the late 40s or something,
you
know.
Yeah.
So it came in handy to call him back in. And he knew a lot of things, tricks to the paper machines, you know. Being a paper tester, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Anybody else besides you and your dad work at the mill?
I had a stepbrother, Tom Mosier.
And
he worked in maintenance. He started off in wax production. Tom had quite a few years in, because he went in 1965, right out of high school.
Okay.
Then he went to U.S. Marine Corps.
And
he got out 4 years later.
Yeah.
And then he stayed right until they closed the gates. Matter of fact, I used to joke with him. I said, Tom.
In October of 2000, he stayed right till the end at the mill?
Yeah, because he was in maintenance. He was one of the head machinists there, M1.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, I used to joke. I hate to say this nowadays, but I used to joke with him. I said, you know, I'm going to be here for a while, but I don't plan on retiring from here. I never did, you know, really. I had almost 10 years in.
Yeah.
And I had a 2-year degree in automotive technology. That's why I moved on. But Tom, he went to school through Brown Company. It was Brown Company, and then it went to James
Rivers.
That's
right.
And they put him through schooling at KBCC for machinists and stuff like that. That was his training. And he was very good. He gave him a block of metal, and he'd make anything in the world, you know. And quite a machinist. And I used to kid him. I said, Tom, you'll probably be the guy who's going to put the lock on the gates here someday. I used to, you know, for 20, 30 years, I kidded him on that. And by God, that's just about what happened to him. I hate to say it that way.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So you lived in Parchment from, how long did you live in Parchment?
Well, it was around 62, I think, when we moved here. And
did you go to Parchment High School?
Yeah. 10th, 11th, and 12th grade.
Sure.
I graduated June 10th, 1966.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then?
Then went to the United States Air Force. So
right.
A bunch of us went downtown, and we signed up on a 120-day delay program. Back then, you didn't have all the protesting going on, and us four or five guys went down there, one or two chickened out, if I remember right. But us guys who went in, wasn't any of this brouhaha about, you know, against the war.
Mm-hmm.
We went into, number one, fight communism,
mm-hmm.
the spread of it, or so we were told.
Right.
Number two, I think we went in because we wanted to make our dads proud. My dad fought in the island hopping campaigns against the Japanese for 3.5 years, from island to island to island, like Tarawa, Borneo, and Luzon.
He did.
And some of the other guys, their dads were over in Europe, or, you know, like in the 8th Air Force or whatever. So we had a little sense of pride, and it was our turn, you know, to defend our flag. Number three, I believe we just watched too many John Wayne movies. Growing up.
The hero.
Yeah.
The hero appealed. I mean, John Wayne probably appealed to you guys.
Yeah.
And what branch were you in?
I went in the Air Force.
And where did you where did you serve?
Well, I went to Lackland Air Base for basic training. Then I went to aircraft maintenance scored pretty good in that, and I attended Amarillo, Texas, 76 School Squadron for aircraft maintenance. Then I went with Strategic Air Command, 28th Bomb Wing, 821st Bomb Group.
Yeah.
We had Operation Arclight, and they operated out of Guam.
Mm-hmm.
Our motto was, we turn night into day, and
whoa,
we did.
Oh.
And then I went with the United States Air Force Europe. Went to Spain and to Germany, USAF it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And made sergeant, and I almost stayed in, but after talking to my dad, he said, come on home.
Oh,
and
okay.
Getting out in 1970, it wasn't the best time. I was told, Sergeant Dalmy, maybe you want to change your uniform before you go to the airport. But I wore my uniform home.
You did. Mm-hmm. And what happened when you came home?
Well, after being gone for 4 years, the bottom line was you come back with stripes on your arm and rows of ribbons.
Yeah.
And a couple buddies gone.
What was the airport like? You know, protest at the airport when you came
in? Yes, at McGuire Air Base, matter of fact. Coming back, I remember Rich Holden, my buddy, was with me, and a couple Navy guys. I stepped off the plane, and I physically, honest to God, I did this. I'd been gone for near 2 years overseas alone. And I got on the tarmac on the military side of it, and I put my duffel bag down, and I kissed the tarmac.
You did.
And then we went through the main gate into the civilian side toward NCO bunkers. I mean, not bunkers, but the headquarters, or not the headquarters, I'm sorry, toward the billeting, billeting rooms. That's where you stay overnight, because I was going to get beat up the next day by the zebras to... You know, you got a lot of money in you, son. Offered me $5,000. I was in a critical career field. That was a lot of money. You know, you could buy two brand new Chevys back then for $5,000.
Sure.
What would I do with all this money, you know? And he promised me a fifth stripe and all this stuff if I stay in within 190 days. Talking about going to Vietnam. So anyway, I thought about it, but my dad said, you know, what the heck? Don't flip the coin twice, was his words, you know. So I decided I'll come home. I still had like 120 days or something. I could make up my mind and come back in if I wanted to.
I see. But you had done your service, so there was no way they could make you go to Vietnam.
No.
Because you had completed your tour of service.
Yeah. That's one of the sad things you got in today's volunteer army is stop loss, and they can say, sorry, you're here for another 6 months.
Right.
Or you got to go back a second or third or fourth time. We had a sign to go. I mean, once your time was up, you'd have to sign to go back in. So we had a choice. You know?
Sure.
But anyway, we got to the point where we got out of the base. We had some fruit thrown at us. Cincinnati Airport on the way home, they gave me bad stares. And I got back, and when I landed at Kalamazoo Airport, the taxi cabber, this is true, refused to put my flight bag, my duffel bag, and my B-14 bag in the trunk. It was an old Plymouth.
Yeah.
I had to throw it in. I told him, he said, where to? I said, 5242 North Riverview Drive, Parchment, Michigan. On the way home, all these buildings, different roads have been put in. I asked him. He would not talk to me.
Oh.
So basically, after being gone for 4 years, my welcome home was standing in the driveway with a cab driver that wouldn't talk to me. And my welcome home was, that'd be $7.40. That's what I got.
Uh-huh.
And I got a heck of a lot better welcome home than some of my other buddies.
Right.
So
right.
That's the way it was back then.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that today's veterans don't get treated. They come home with honor and respect.
Mm-hmm. So you stayed. So you went back to your parents' home in 70.
Yeah.
70?
Yeah. September 70. Yeah.
And you stayed there for how long? You lived there for how long?
Probably near a year.
Okay.
I got the itch to, I got to get out of here because I'm, 22 and a half.
You've seen parts of the world already and you got to go.
Lived in foreign countries. And,
sure.
And what I did was I had some stereo equipment that I bought in Germany and I made good money on that, you know, because you can play a lot cheaper, you know. Brand new, still in the crate.
And
I got real good money and I bought a car. And then I went looking for some part-time work, and I applied for Kalamazoo Valley College and got $175 a month on the GI Bill. I had two and three part-time jobs.
Okay.
to get through that, you know. So it was kind of tough at first, but, you know.
But you got a two-year degree.
Yeah.
In
technology, automotive tech.
From KVCC.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yes.
So.
Okay. And?
Yeah, I remember getting food stamps and
did you?
A block of government cheese from the Nixon.
Yes. Yep. Administration? Mm-hmm. Did you?
Oh, yeah. I think it was Velveeta. It melted, really.
Something close.
It melted on the way home.
Yeah.
In the sun. Yeah. But what do you expect from Richard at Milhouse?
So,
I was not a fan of Tricky Dick.
I hear that. So, you worked, and then you went to work for the mill when?
Toward the end of 72.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and where did you start? What doing what at the mill?
Well, I remember I took the physical, and I applied all around, and they just weren't hiring veterans too much back in those days, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
So anyway, I went down on Patterson, I think it was, and I took the physical. I was surprised because I put my application in, and a guy named Roger Subots, I went to high school, happened to be there. And Roger and I were talking, and all of a sudden they grabbed both of us and said, we got to give you a physical. And I said, hey, okay. That was about noontime. And they said, come back in a half hour. So we went and got something to eat, and we come back about 1:30. Took our physical, and the guy looked at me and said, you're going to be late to work. You got 15 minutes to make it to Plant 2, Dock 6, and Parchment Shipping Department.
Oh.
I said, right now? I wasn't dressed to go to work.
Yeah.
But there I walked in. I remember a guy named John DeMore, I think it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Big Dutch guy. He come up and grabbed my arm and says, not much meat on the bone there. You're going to be throwing 100-pound bundles. Better take that jacket off. This is what he said.
You got hired
come
on
here
the spot.
And fill a time card
you
out.
Just
yeah.
Wow.
And they had what you call a four-man crew back there. So what you did was throw 100-pound loin wraps and bundles and rolls.
Okay.
And you loaded semis and boxcars. You did not drive a fork mule. You had to earn your way up to it back then.
I see.
It might take you a year or two before you became a fork driver. You know, or
that was the next level. That was the next. Mm-hmm. We proceed to forklift
yeah,
driver.
Then after that was a loadsman. After mm-hmm. that, a crew. You'd have two or three, four guys on you. You'd have to figure out the tonnage and weight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get it all leveled, how to key lock, load it, and block it, and
yes.
tag it, and everything.
Okay.
And do the billing, too. Lay the billing.
Okay.
And so, you know, it was a lot of work, physical work, you know.
Yes.
And the thing that it didn't bother me that much because I was 22 and a half going, or 23, no, I was actually near 24 at the time.
Okay.
By then.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me that much, but about a third of the guys that were in there were probably Vietnam vets or veterans.
Is that right?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
The paper mill did hire your veterans.
They did?
Yeah, they did. I can say that much.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
even if it wasn't, there's so many people from around the area I knew. And a lot of people
sure.
knew my dad, Joe. Everybody knew Joe. And matter of fact, I was called Joe's boy quite a bit.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it come in handy for little things like the credit union. I'd go in there and instead of like a month to wait or 2 weeks to wait for a loan, sometimes it was a little quicker, I'll put it that way. Sure.
Great.
And, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was part of the family there, you know.
That's
you go
right.
to work and I worked at different companies and organizations, and I can honestly say that except for the military, where you have guys in the same boat as you, you got your back covered and you trust them with your life.
Mm-hmm.
The paper mill is the only place I have ever worked where I thought the same way. We worked hard, we played hard, and we, off of work, we hung around together and did all kinds of stuff
you
together.
Did. Yeah, like...
And we were a family, and the guys like in shipping, they, you know, right before payday, us young guys would hit the old Cozy Inn and blow a third of our paycheck on Thirsty Thursday and have a great time. And some of the older guys on day shift would come up to me and say, hey, Dave, you need any money? You know, I'm probably broke by now. And I go, yeah, I could use 20. And most of them would say, well, here's 40.
No kidding.
Or 30 bucks. You know, a lot of them, you know. And I'd always pay them back, of course, next one or two days or whatever.
Yeah.
They knew that, you know. And if you needed help, they'd come over. And we went over to other guys' house and help them, you know, paint or put addition on or we build race cars. We did everything, I'll tell you. You know,
sure.
We were like a big family.
Did you play on any of the sports teams at the mill?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Some of the other guys, they did, but I did not.
Yeah.
I remember a guy named Bob Smelcher. Boy, was he good.
Yeah.
Softball.
Yes.
Yeah, he took him to a state championship back in the 70s.
I
just found out he passed away a few months ago.
Oh.
He was a Vietnam vet.
Oh. And another Vietnam vet.
So, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
We had some good bowlers, too. I mean, there was a lot of good
people. Yeah, the bowling team was hot over there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, I think his name was David Ledbetter, I think it was. And he bowled some 300 games and stuff.
Yeah.
He could have gone, like, you know.
Yeah.
Pro, maybe, or semi-pro back for the day.
Sure. So, you guys had fun in Parchment.
We worked hard.
Remember the downtown? Did you hang out downtown? What was downtown?
Well, as a teenager,
yeah,
I remember getting in trouble because I had a Honda motorcycle. And I could wheel walk it pretty good. And I took off from...
Did you have a CRX?
No, I had a... we had a 305 Scrambler, and then I had an S90.
Okay.
Dual cam S90 that just come out like in 65.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Five or six of us bought them.
Ah.
And I got really good. At second gear, I could keep that thing up all day long. So what I did was I said, I'm going to try to set a record here. So I took off from Parchment High School parking lot, and I wheel walked it all the way to Belle Isles.
No, which is right down here by the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I never come down on the front wheel at all. And Howard Nahickian was the part-time cop, and he was behind me. And, of course, he wrote me three or four tickets by the time I got down to Bob Belle Isles.
You did.
For going through stoplights and not using my hand signals and a bunch of stuff. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
And, back then, I could really care, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I know.
But,
a lot full of
fun
beans.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know. Yeah, we had a good time up at Parchment High School.
Yes.
And high school, I can honestly say, like today, I bought the Citadel.
Yeah.
It was my yearbook. 42 years later, I finally got it.
Yeah.
I was in the service, and somebody probably got mine.
Well, tell that story. Tell that story how you got this yearbook today.
Yeah, before I graduated, we went in there, and it was Terry Berry Company from Grand Rapids that made the rings. I got my ring, black onyx and pearl. It had a P on it for parts, or PHS. But I never got my yearbook. It was called the Citadel. And I never even saw what color or anything about it, what it looked like. 4 years later, when I got back, I went to Parchment High School, and I said, I'd like to get my yearbook, you know. And they went in, come back out after 5 minutes, and said, we got one, and that's only for the archives. We can't give it to you. And I said, well, what do I do? And they said, well, let me call up to Grand Rapids. And a few months went by, and I called them back, and apparently they forgot to get back to me.
Oh.
But anyway, they said that they didn't have any extras, so too bad.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine, Roger Smith, who was a year behind me, we had drafting classes together, and he became an engineer for Bosch Company down in Indiana. He just retired here. And 2 years ago, I'm 62 now, so it was my 60th birthday. I was 42 years had gone by. And he said, happy birthday to you, Dave. And I cracked open the paper, and there was a copper-colored book, and I saw the back part of it. And I looked at Ryder and said, you got to be kidding me. This isn't what I think it is. And he started, smiling.
Yeah.
And I got kind of teary-eyed, really.
Sure.
But 42 years later, I got my yearbook.
Yeah. Great.
And we're all 18 years old here when I opened the page.
Exactly.
So,
how we remember
each
other.
Good guy. I'm glad that he remembered I didn't have it. And a friend of his had an extra one.
Yeah.
And this was a year ahead of that guy, his friend, so he didn't really need it.
Right.
And he gave it to Roger, so I got it. So.
That's a great story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a great story. So, you remember Belle Isles and...
Well, Bob
all
Belle Isle.
Businesses downtown. And
Bob Belle Isle. We'd hang there. We were drugstore cowboys, about 10, 12 of us, you know. And a year before us and behind us, I mean, that was the place to go to in Parchment. Yeah. It wasn't a lot for a young guy to do here in Parchment back then.
True. Right.
And Bob would go in the back room, come by us guys sitting at the soda fountain. He'd always have a mop in the hand. He'd walk by real slow, and he'd look up at the lights. He'd look at us and look up at the lights and look down. And he said, boys, it takes money to burn these lights. In other words, buy a Coke or buy a hamburger or don't just sit there,
So, that's great.
That was true. And we respected Bob because he really took care of the school and he thought about it. He supported the programs.
Yeah.
And as when I come home, and here I am a young adult, And I come in and I helped my mom for a while, and I went in and paid bills. And he said, "Hi, how you doing there, Dave?" And I'm good. And how's your parents and stuff? And he still remembered me, and and then it hit me more than ever of when I saw him talking to high school kids in there and how he treated them, how important the community was to him. You know, as a kid, you don't think that way.
Right.
But, you know, I like Bob Bell. Good
man. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk some more about all the different things you did at the mill. Because you were at the mill for 10 years?
Almost 10 years. About 9 and a half.
What kinds of jobs did you do there?
You name it, and I did it. I was in every department, I think, except for decoders. I've worked everything.
You did?
Yep.
Oh.
On overtime or bumped out for a while or whatever, but you name it, and I've been there. Mill 1 and 2 and 3. I was almost a year in maintenance, too.
You do it? Mill 1, 2, and 3?
Yep, mill 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And, oh, yeah, 12 is in back. And I did work part-time in there, too.
So, okay.
Yeah, put 12 on
Plant
there,
Plant 12,
too.
Yeah.
And I forgot about that, because I remember when they were building it, we used to take our Honda three-wheelers and ride them to work off and on.
Yeah.
We'd go back there on the pad where they poured Plant 12 back there, and us guys in shipping and kind of screw off a little bit on break time, you know.
Right. But,
yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember, you remember the house you lived in?
Oh, yeah.
What was the street address?
5242 North Riverview Drive.
Okay.
Right. We were actually like in Cooper Township, you know.
Sure.
Over the line.
Sure.
Excuse me.
What was your mother's name?
Ann.
Mother's name was Ann. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Well, I got a stepsister, Delight.
Okay.
And stepbrother, Tom.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had a stepbrother, Alan, but he passed away in 98.
So, are they all older than you, younger than you?
They're all older.
They're all older.
Yeah, I'm the youngest.
You are. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said that
you... And I'm the best looking.
Yeah. I'm going to take your word for that. Your dad's name was Joe? Mm-hmm. What was your mother's maiden name?
Anna.
Her last name was Anna?
Yeah, well, Ritz, R-I-T-Z.
Anna Ritz, was your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Do you remember do any of your neighbors here stand out particularly?
Yeah. Across the street we had the Martins. Harry Martin was the print shop foreman. My mom and Mrs. Martin, Esther Martin, she lived to be like 92 or 3, actually. They were on golfing teams and bowling teams together, and I think they did square dancing too.
Okay.
They were kind of in competition a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we had the better lawn and stuff.
Oh, no. Oh, the Keep Up the Joneses kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, big time back in the 60s. Oh, yeah.
That's true.
And then you had the Snyders and the Burkhausens across the street. You had the Orzacs. You had Barry Anderson. I used to hang around with him. And his dad was a mailman here in town.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Anderson, yeah.
Okay, so...
It was.
Did they all have kids and you guys all went to high school together or kind of like that?
Yeah. Yeah, we all had. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of us I named had.
Sure.
They're the same age or a year younger than me. Yeah,
right.
We all partly
great.
Hung around together part time and
yeah.
did things. Yeah. And
did you play sports in high school?
Basketball. Intramural basketball.
Intramural basketball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In 12th grade, I had to keep a B average and I was on co-op.
Yes.
So I had three classes in the morning.
Right.
And that's, then I went to North American Aluminum. It's gone now.
Oh, was that here?
Just outside town. I drew blueprints.
You did? Okay.
Yep.
That's right, because you had all those drafting classes in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did vellum and sepia. And not that our prints really mattered that much. They stayed internally, you know.
I see.
You know, because, you know.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, we were high school kids, you know.
Yeah.
But, I was thinking about being an engineer, like older stepbrother Alan was.
Okay.
He became vice president for engineering at Bond Aluminum in Holland.
I see.
And he was good.
Yeah.
He was real good.
How about favorite teachers?
Favorite teachers at Parchman High School?
Yeah.
Mr. McDonald, shop teacher. Jack Kruger. He was a driver's training in sports for me. But Jack Kruger, he used to work the summers at Paper Mill. My dad would get him up there at the machine room and stuff.
You know? Yeah?
Yeah. I like Mr. Kruger. He's good. oh, let me see here, Mr. Art, guidance counselor, a very understanding person. You know, if you got in trouble, he's right there with you. Yeah,
great.
Yeah, Mr. Art.
Okay.
Mr. Strelo. Mr. Strelo, I think, I don't know anybody that did not like that gentleman. He was a great teacher. He was there 30-some years, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a hell of a, okay. hell of a teacher, actually, I think.
Okay.
One of the best, Mr. Strelo. Mm-hmm.
Did he have a daughter named Laura?
I'm not sure.
Okay, had a...
Well, he might have.
I met a couple named Strelos because their daughter gave a presentation here on...
They lived
I believe that might have been him. He was in
was.
Here in the last year.
Hmm?
I think that was him. They were in here within the last year at a program we had here.
Oh, I thought he had passed away.
Really? I could be wrong about the first name.
I think
then.
He had passed away for years back.
Okay.
But I think they lived on, I think it was Parchmount. Way up there, you know, outside mm-hmm. of the city limit.
Yes.
More in the Kalamazoo area,
sure.
I think.
Yes.
Somewhere near,
sure.
just over the line.
Sure. Did you like school?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah. Parchmount High School. You know, when I started there, it was only about a year old. Brand new.
Oh, yeah.
I remember some of the lockers were still not working good. They were sticking there brand new.
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
And my tennis shoes, I remember squeaking on the brand new tiles in there, you know. The teachers were very good. Us kids, we could not wear blue jeans or t-shirts.
Right.
Corduroy pants, if the teacher felt really forgiving that day, it was okay. If not, you had to go home and change.
Mm-hmm.
And like tennis shoes you couldn't wear, you know.
That's right.
And the girls had to have skirts so far below the knee.
That's right.
You know, stuff like that. You know, not like today at all, you know.
Mm-mm.
And us guys, especially around 12th or 11th grade anyway, we got our driver's licenses. And it was important for us guys at Parchmount. We'd wear good-looking pants or maybe wingtips, you know. A V-neck
wing
sweat.
Wingtips, really?
A Madras shirt, bleeding Madras to come with matching bell and V-neck sweaters. It was important for us to look good, and number one. Number two, it was important for us to have a good-looking car, clean, sharp car. Then you could get the girl.
Right.
The girls come automatically then. You know?
That's right.
A lot of guys, I had my 57 Ford, everybody knew it was mellow yellow.
My. It was? You had a 57 Ford.
Yeah, I painted it canary yellow, green tinted windows.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody knew it as mellow yellow. Hang around sports is driving.
Yeah.
Gas was probably about 35 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
37 for high test gas or ethanol.
Yeah.
Back then, you don't hear that. And you go down to Swartz's on Thursday night, maybe it was. It was like 6 hamburgers for $1 with fries. And, you know, you try to find out where the parties were and where the gals were hanging out and stuff like that. And you sit there, elbow out the window at night with your parking lights on.
Yeah.
Listening to the Beach Boys, the Rolling Stones, Roy Orbison. Yeah, yeah.
How about dances? Did they have school dances?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they had hog shuffles. Yeah. That's what we call them.
You did? They called the high school dances hog shuffles.
Well, us guys did.
Or just you guys.
Yeah.
The snazzy dressers in the Chevys and Fords and stuff.
Yeah, there's the dances. I know I got in trouble. Might as well.
Come
who cares
on.
Now?
Let it out.
But a couple guys I was hanging with, we had some. I'm not sure what it was. I keep thinking it was lime vodka. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But we took it in, and I had it under my belt.
Yeah.
And the guy who was standing next to me, he had made a real quick move with his hand and hit my side of my sweater.
Yeah.
And it fell out under the floor and broke.
Oh.
And I was suspended for 2 weeks.
You were?
My dad had to come in and talk. And then the other guy was, too. And
So what was the punishment at home for that? Besides being suspended,
my dad took the keys from my car for a couple of weeks at least. I think I was 2 weeks out of school.
Yeah.
I think, something like that. Maybe a week. I can't remember.
But no police report.
No.
For minor in possession.
No, matter of fact... I'll tell you, I got caught later on with four or five guys in my car, old mellow yellow, with a couple cases of beer in the car, right on the school property. And this is really true. Judge Pierce lived on Parchmount Street, I think it was, and we had to go back there, and we paid $14.95 for our fine. And for anything. And But this time we had to go to downtown to the city hall and be there on a Saturday morning. And I remember they took the two cases of beer from us, and there was about five of us in my car. And Howard DeHakian, part-time cop, he put his face right in my face, in my window, my 57 Ford, and said, "Mr. Dalmy." And then he looked around and named everybody else in the car. He knew them all. "You will be at City Hall at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, or else." And he hesitated. I'm going, "Hope, you know."
Yeah.
"Or we're going to tell your parents." So he went in and increased the fine to $25 from $14.95.
When you went in?
Yeah.
When you showed up?
Yeah. And everybody come up with $25, and then...
But and your parents didn't know.
I didn't tell them. No.
Wow.
And I never got no points on my license or nothing. We paid $25, and we all showed up and paid, and we took
off. You and how many other guys?
Five other guys.
So six of you.
Yeah.
But no...
I can name them all, but I don't want to.
No. That's up to you if you want to do that.
I know. Everybody was in my car that night.
But six guys, no record. Mm-mm. They didn't tell your parents.
No, I added up. I added up the last summer I was in town, and a bunch of us guys. I had like 24 points or 26 points.
You did.
Yeah, for wheel walking, my motorcycle, for drag racing, for not using the turn signal. They were just getting me for anything they could.
Yes.
You know, I wasn't a real bad guy or nothing. You know, we were just fooling around. And I remember Bob Scoops had a whole bunch of. Jim Lindstrom had a whole bunch of points. We were all going into service.
And
Judge Pierce calls to his house, and four or five of us were in there. And this is true. And he said, "I just want to tell you boys," because he knew we were graduating and going into service. He says, "Well, number one, I want to say good luck to you guys in the future and stuff as we paid our fines."
Yeah.
You know. And he said, "I want you to look out back here in the glassed-in patio in his back of his house was a terraced garden, rose garden. He had two or three terraces to it. Very beautiful rose garden, I might add. And he said, my wife is here, and she come out, and she's smiling. Everybody said, hi, Mrs. Pierce, you know. And he said this, I'll never forget it. I want you two boys to look out at that rose garden. Because in the last 4 years, you guys paid for all that."
Oh, really?
Yeah. So all that money, I think, went into his rose garden.
That you paired with?
Because most of them never got recorded downtown in Kalamazoo against me.
Uh-huh.
You know? And a lot of us guys. So, justice of the peace, you know what I'm saying? Those days are gone.
A kid
nowadays pulled what we did.
Oh, yeah.
He'd end up in jail at least with big fines.
Oh, you wouldn't have a license. They'd have snatched
it. So, sure. I mean, you know. But, yeah. But I did get a thing in the mail while 7-8 months after I'd been in the service that my Michigan license was, you know, I was supposed to show up in Lansing for a review. But after 4 years, it was all renewed, so it was scrubbed.
Right.
Scrubbed free, so.
Lucky me.
And all of us guys come back with, you know. But, I mean, compared to what kids do nowadays, we were angels, really.
Yeah,
you know, really.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did get a top security clearance with the Air Force for a while at Ellsworth. It was called Top Secret Crypto.
Okay.
And I did not know this, but after I got out of service, my dad told me. He said, yeah, they were at the house, wanted to know about you. They had contacted my elementary school teachers.
Yeah.
They contacted the teachers at
They're
Parchman
pretty
High
serious.
School.
Yeah.
And when I got debriefed to leave that base and got my just to a regular security clearance, the major I talked to that day kind of laughed as he folded my folder up and slid it into his file and said, he said, well, you've done a good job with us, and you're back to just a crypto clearance from Top Secret Crypto. And I said, okay. He said, you'll be going to your new unit in Europe pretty soon. And he said, just try not to get caught drinking beer on the school property again.
Oh.
I said, what? You know, they dug up everything on you, you wouldn't believe. I thought nobody knew about that, except one or two of the cops in town. That was
right.
Guess what?
Yes.
You can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah.
But
sure.
He laughed,
sure.
Like, you know, sounds like an average American kid to me. You know?
Right.
So they,
right.
They didn't care about it. You know?
Right.
Party growing up.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. Those are... Now, you told me... Of course, you didn't know Jacob Kindleberger because he died in 1947, but you told me you heard stories.
Oh, yeah, from the old guys.
From the old guys, what were they saying?
No, I'm the old guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the older gang there, you know, worked there in the 30s and 40s and 50s that we talked to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
As young guys going into the paper mill told us about Mr. Kindleberger coming around, and a lot of these houses were small houses. They're mill houses, we call them.
That's right.
Families that lived around the area.
Right.
There were reports from these guys, I mean, it actually told me, because Mr. Kindleberger owned their house until they were able to pay it off after 20, 30 years, you know. And come over here, and I highly suggest that you paint that fence or mow that lawn or take care of that Easter off or whatever, because he still owned the house. And he would go around and make sure that, you know, things were kept up. And I got to say this, in the 60s, when I lived here as a young guy, hope nobody takes offense at this, but parchment was kept up a lot better than it is now.
Yeah.
And
changed a lot.
People dressed better. They were more polite. And I look back at that, and us kids, baby boomers, did not know how nice we had it. We had not a Leave It to Beaver neighborhood, but darn near it. Mm-hmm. We were middle white class kids, and I'll tell you what, it was a great area to grow up in. I look back at it now and I go, it was nice. The park and everything.
Yeah, the park.
We'd hang around the park and we were pretty respectful. We were playful at times, you know, we were guys growing up, but we still had respect for the law and stuff like that. And, you know, just in general, the way things were kept up back then and the attitude of the adults and everything, too.
Sure.
I miss that. Sure. I don't see that around no more. You know,
it's mutated
into, I don't know. Either that or I'm getting old and cranky.
Well, you know, that's one of the questions I was going to ask. How's parchment changed?
Mm-hmm.
It's changed a lot from what you just said, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it's not as busy as it was for sure, because the mill's gone.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there used to be a little bit more, I think, I'll use the word pride in the city.
I see.
Pride.
Sure.
We were the paper people. And anybody you talk to, you're not working, so you bumped into them in the store, you automatically start talking about the paper mill.
Right.
Or problems or whatever, but everybody took pride in it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember guys I worked with coming up and putting stuff off to the side in an assembly line up in Bonroom when I worked overtime up there. And I said, what are you putting that over there for? Well, it's got a little ding in it. Now, you see, it probably could have got shipped out and sold to the the customer, but before they put the label or the golden oak wrapper on it, it had to be 100%. That was pride and professionalism. And everybody I worked with, to some degree, there felt that way.
Yes.
If they didn't feel that way, they didn't last too long.
Ah.
You know?
Okay.
Not that they fire them on purpose, but they just kind of like didn't fit in the program, and they moved on.
Well,
go over to 1010 side then. We don't. Don't need you at 323, you know.
Really?
I was proud.
That's the local. Local 323.
I had pride, you know.
I
worked in just about every department. And it just about every, you know, you might not like the job you're doing or whatever, but you still had pride in what you put out, you know. Eventually people found a department that they did want to work in, you know, transfer here and there. And in time you find a place and light there and stay there.
Sure.
But we put out good quality products. You know, I remember my dad coming home as a kid, and we were guinea pigs. You see, he knew the guys in the lab, being a paper tester, and some of your first deli paper in the 50s that come out. They were small and pop-up type, you know, in an orange box, a KVP. And the general public didn't have them out yet. Matter of fact, they hadn't even produced them yet. It was still experimental. And I had some of these laying around, I don't know, for half a century or better. And about 4 or 5 years ago at the Kalamazoo Museum downtown, Arcadia area, I donated that one box, and they did not have anything on file about it. I said, no, you won't have anything on file about it, because it was an experimental thing that didn't work out.
Wow.
And they got the box on display with my dad's name on it.
Great.
It was, my dad would come home at Christmas time with all kinds of Christmas paper. We never bought Christmas paper.
The Christmas paper stories.
Yeah.
Lots of people have related how much Christmas paper they always had.
I don't ever remember ever buying Christmas paper. We didn't have to. We up in our attic, we had so much we couldn't. We were giving away to relatives. I'm serious. And freezer paper.
And freezer Cola, paper, too.
Double poly-coated freezer paper. The best you can buy. We never bought any freezer paper. Or wax paper.
Yeah.
Or bond paper. School paper.
Yeah.
In South Haven, in elementary schools, my dad donated all kinds of line paper, you know, bond paper, school paper, tracing paper, different sizes, 8.5 by 11, 11 by 14s, whatever, bigger, and different types of pencils and stuff like that that they had, the red pencils that he used in checking off stock up there in the laboratory. And the teachers just love me because, boy, we supply all kinds of stuff. Hey, can your dad get this and that? And I tell my dad, and about a week later, he'd come in with big boxes full of it.
Really?
See, he get them free. They were second rejects, you know.
Sure.
There's nothing really wrong with them, but maybe the packaging on the outside was mislabeled or something. Instead of throwing them in the pulper to get rebeated up, they say, yeah, go ahead, Joe, take it home. And then he'd give it to the teachers, you know.
Fabulous.
Then I'd get a better grade. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But, you know, that was some of the perks about, you know, being in paper business.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, my dad would reject stuff, and a lot of guys would say, oh, Joe, that's okay. But my dad said, no, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's borderline. That's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I think that's why a lot of the guys respected my dad. He didn't okay it to be shipped out.
Right.
To be, you know, continue on the process.
Yeah.
Said, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he grew up in the paper mill from the ground up. He worked his way up to that position.
Sure.
So he knew every part of that paper machine before he got there.
Yeah.
You know, how it operated and what to look for. And, you know, he knew the customers and what they wanted, too. You know, you don't learn that in 4 or 5 years.
That's right.
It takes decades to learn that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad, you know, a lot of people like my dad. I never heard anybody talk bad about him.
Yeah.
So, he's a good guy.
Let me ask you some biographical information. Mm-hmm. Are you married?
No, I'm not.
You're not married. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thinking about it.
Okay, do you have kids?
No, I don't.
No kids. Okay. What did we miss? Did we miss anything? You said you had worked for Marriott Corporation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For how many years did you do
around
that,
10
Dave?
Years. Yeah.
Around 10 years. And what did you do for them?
Well, I started off in general accounting, actually, with them for about a year, year and a half. And then I, up in Grand Rapids, I used to be at 5728 Street. It's gone now. It's a Holiday Inn. And Centennial Park up there.
Yeah. Right.
And then it was only about 2.5 years old when I got there in Marriott. We used to have 5K runs up there and hot air balloons. And it was a lot of fun working there, actually.
Uh-huh.
We had a good time. And there was 3-piece suits every day, you know. Across the T and dot the I.
Yeah, yeah.
And Christian Dior shirts and ties every day.
How did you... Yeah.
And it was a different world from the paper mill. One extreme to the other.
Very.
Friend of mine, Dave McArthur, he was the chief controller at the time.
I see.
And he said, you got business management as a minor. What do you think about business, you know? And I said, I don't know. And I spent a couple weekends up there, and he was showing me around. And another guy up there said, you know, here's what we can start you at. And I said, well, heck, I'd make more at the paper mill. But here's what you can do. And I thought, well, I didn't want to stay at the paper mill all my life after sitting in the break room seeing half the guys with missing fingers and stuff. I'm serious with it, you know, sitting here. I'm going, I don't want to end up like that or maybe fall into a paper machine, you know, or breathe in all this stuff.
Yeah.
Glue and hot wax in the air and ink.
Sure.
Tetracarbon tet that they clean the felts
with.
And, you know, all those guys were breathing that stuff in, you know, and other guys more than others. They're working in the acid machines at Mill 1 and going to the locker and taking a shower and looking down, my underwear had holes in it. I'm going, well, if my underwear's got holes in it, what's my lungs got, you know? How long can I last with this, you know, before my hair falls out, you know? So, you know, we laugh now, but, you know.
I know. I can only imagine I wasn't there, but you,
And I said, you
certainly believe you.
I said, I think I can move on and do something different, you know. So I went from being a mill rat to a 3-piece suit, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got to travel after a while, after I got into management. You know?
Sure.
And, you know, you started off, because if you wanted to get into management, you had to go into the maintenance part of it. You had to be in housekeeping for about a month.
Yeah.
I was making beds, cleaning rooms.
Oh, sure.
If I got to be the boss, it's the old adage. And here's, like my dad used to say, and it's true. If you're going to sit in the captain's chair, you had damn better have worked in the galley.
There you go. Sure. Sure.
And that's the best way to be a good manager.
Yeah.
You'll be a fair manager, and you'll be an understanding manager.
Mm-hmm.
If you want not a high turnover rate, because all you want is bottom line. There's more to operating a business. You got to have the human factor involved.
Right.
It's a fine line that you got to walk.
Yep.
Where everybody can't please everybody.
True.
You got to please business. You're the meat and the sandwich, I called it. Not everybody can do it.
True.
So
sure.
7 days a week,
sure.
The hotel business. Unless it burns down or blows up, you're there.
Absolutely. You've got to be
People
there.
Don't realize that. I walk around with my gold name tag on. I said, Mr. Delmy, oh boy, he's got it made.
Yeah.
Well, spend a week in my shoes with a beeper and a radio, and every 5 minutes you got a problem somewhere. You know, invisible fire extinguisher I carried around putting out fires. You know?
Yeah.
Customer
yeah.
complaint or... in human resources, you know, something wasn't going right, or in maintenance, you know. It's like being a one guy one night said, well, what's it like being a manager of a Marriott with 200 and some employees, you know, and you're 7 days a week, 24 hours a day? I said, it's like being a mayor of a small city.
Yeah.
You know, only you don't get elected.
Right.
You don't have to worry about campaigning elections every 4 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you got to please the corporation, too. And they come over and they inspect you, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they got their quality assurance people to come in and grade you and surprise inspections anytime, day or night. You don't know who they are. It's a guy who's dressed up and he says he works for an aircraft company and he's spending one night and he's inspecting you. He's going to the restaurant, he's testing the food, he's going to the bar to see if they're overpouring.
Yeah.
Or taking more tips, or is it being metered outright? He's checking in the room to see for dust and everything.
Sure.
So he'll accidentally go into the laundry. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. I must be in the wrong place. Just look, take a quick peek, see if everything's kosher.
You
know, or the public restrooms, or he might stay for the dining if you got full facility.
Mm-hmm.
He might check the parking lot, see if you got security at night, or you know what's going on.
Sure.
He'll make his report, and you might not see it for a few weeks.
That's right.
It'll be mailed to you.
Yeah.
Let you know how you did on surprise.
Surprise,
inspection.
Surprise,
In the Air Force, we call it ORI, Operational Readiness Inspection, with Strategic Air Command.
Okay.
We would have, you know, we don't know who would come to the base.
Yeah, yeah.
And they pull that on you, you know, and it was white glove inspections, and back there, in those days, it was the Cold War, and B-52s were on call, and you had them circling all the time. And
right.
It was cross the T and dot the I, or it was zero defects, it was called.
Uh-huh.
You can't make a mistake.
Right, yeah.
And that kind of instilled in me, to some degree. I still hang my clothes up the same way in the closet.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? What did you do after that, Dave? Or are you still working?
No, I'm retired now.
You're retired now?
Yeah, I'm on Social Security.
Yes, you
That's
are.
Why I see this, my hair is gray.
As he scratches his beard. Yep. Okay, I think we covered everything.
Okay.
I think so. I thank you so much.
Okay.
This is, like I said, everybody's story is different here.
Mm-hmm.
And got another piece to the puzzle here for KVP and Parchment. So... we really appreciate it, Dave. Thanks a lot.
You bet.